Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So, this is the first talk of the Rains Retreat. And for those of you who may or may not know, from the Thai Forest tradition, we don't really plan too much. And usually have a sit and see what comes up. So I was just sitting, different themes just came. And one of it is that's been going around and hard to miss this week is the one of the heavenly messengers come and visit us, visit quite a few of us. Some of you may or may not know the three heavenly messengers that the Buddha talked about in the suttas is old age, sickness, and death. Normally you think, well, I don't know, that's very inspiring. They look like very angelic things. But they do remind us that, yeah, this body, this life of ours is temporary, and that eventually we all will pass away. And then, you know, and so it points to the question, you know, why are we here? That you enjoy things, bit of fun in the game, relationships, empire building, building an empire, grabbing power, sensuality, extreme experiences, something to write about, to blog about, and then pass away. Do it again. So it does kind of point the question, you know, why are we here? What is the meaning of all this? This body is just going to age. And whether you're a prime minister, you know, a great entrepreneur, you're going to still end up in the same place as everybody else. I think from a Buddhist perspective, it points to the training of the mind. We're here because we want to be here, and there's a lesson to be learned. And until we learn it, we'll keep coming back. It's like you're going through school. You don't pass the test, you come back to the same grade. So it's good to ask, you know, each and every one of us, you know, what is the lesson that we're here to learn? What is we're meant to do in life? Could be a purpose. But the heavenly messenger is also pointing to this very kind of, you know, we hear it all the time that the body is not ours. But it's only when it gets sick that we really, it rubs in. It's hard to miss that it's not ours. That we're not, we don't control it. Of course it's ours because the feeling is ours to a certain extent. But it's not ours because it doesn't come under control. It gets sick when it feels like it. And when it gets well when it feels like it. Sure, we do what we best to take care of it. But a lot of times there's only so much we can do. The rest of us is just kind of allowing nature to take its course. And it's where the practice comes in. Just seeing the body get sick, being an unpleasant feeling, and not allowing the mind to also get annoyed, irritated, afraid, anxious over it. Just watching, yeah, unpleasant feeling, feeling weak and achy, with headache. It's not the end of the world. And like I said, most of us, luckily, hopefully, will get well within a few days. But it's good to reflect that some people do not get well. There are others who are, you know, in hospital, terminally ill. Then these achy feelings are there for a long, long time. Or people with terminal headache or whatever, terminal pain, that they do live with this day in, day out. And so it's good to bring to mind. And it's not to get us depressed, but it's a good encouragement that we have this great blessing. We have the body that works well enough. We have this great opportunity in the next 3 months to really train the mind, to really practice in different ways. And it's a great opportunity, the freedom, the encouragement, the great support, each and every one of us. We're in a point in our life that we are here. Whatever karmic connections that we brought us to the back, spend great resources, amount of resources together, this team here that just works well together, rubs us enough the wrong ways, allows us to reflect on how we annoy each other from time to time, but also how we support each other in the holy life. But different personalities just offset each other. So, like I said, next 3 months is, you know, up to each and every one of us to practice in our different ways. The weather, organize the weather to be just a bit cold, so something to work with, not too easy. Work with the coldness. Sitting in the sala, what does that feel like? And it's always about the practice, about working with different things arising and passing away. And also working with our kind of reaction to it. A lot of times it's not the cold that is so terrible, but it's the I don't want to be cold. I want to be warm. I don't like this. It's a reaction that makes it much more worse. Yeah, like I was saying, sometimes it's just kind of relaxing the body to it, just taking a step back and investigating the feeling of the cold. How does it feel in your hands? How does it feel in your face, your feet? And actually, it's quite, could be quite calming. An interesting experience just to relax into the coldness, or to relax into the sickness, the achiness, the headache. But I think the first week, things are calming down. There's a bit of pieces for myself to finish up. That's okay. But the main thing is to set up kind of the right attitude for the next 3 months. You know, what we're going to do for the 3 months. We have little projects of, you know, what teachings you want to look over, what suttas you want to work with, how much fasting you want or not want to do, how late you want to stay up. Maybe you don't want to lie down with the harangues. I think last rain somebody didn't lie down with the harangues. Either it drove him nuts and us nuts at the same time. So don't do that again. That's the important thing is, any kind of ascetic practice, please check with myself first. Let me know whether it's appropriate. Kelly's trying to figure out who did it. You know who did it. Preacher. Anyway. The practices are obviously has a point in mind. It's just kind of lessen our attachment to the body, but also it's when any practice is at least is, you know, kind of working away a sense of self. So sometimes we do this practice and we wrap our sense of self around it. I'm this great faster. I fast a month or something. I'm great. This great practitioner. I didn't lie down the whole time, and now it kind of defeats the purpose of doing this study practice is to rub away the sense of self, to rub away our desires and attachment. So with any practice, just kind of be careful how we approach it. In the spirit of letting go, in the spirit of just testing our limits, pushing our boundary a little bit. And usually when the practice is, you know, I think this is where faith and trust is important. When we do long sits, we sit all night, we sit for 5 or 6 hours on Sundays, and we do something difficult. It's good that you bring up a sense of doing this out of gratitude, out of inspiration from the Buddha, from the teachers that you know and met, or out of gratitude and appreciation for the donors that come and help us, you know, maintain the monastery. You know, instead of just, you know, instead of having this attitude of I'm this great practitioner and I'm going to be enlightened, this reigns. I'm going to sit through pain. I'm going to conquer my desires. I'm conquering my thirst and my lust. I'm going to squash everything out. My sheer willpower, because I am such a spiritual warrior. That usually ends up in one way. And it's not a pretty sight. Usually that ends up with, you know, usually you get crushed by it because you don't meet the spiritual warrior that you build up yourself to be. And then you get a bit depressed over it. Or if you do make it, pride comes up. And it builds up a sense of, and usually pride will with the pride comes the big fall. Because the world is so, so much bigger than all of us. So we only can only control the world through willpower for a certain amount of time. We control our body for a certain amount of time. But eventually our body will give up. So the more we push it, eventually it doesn't obey our will. So knowing that, we're trying to work with the body, work with the mind. And with the long sit, it's always, you know, a bit of pushing, a bit of working with kind of mental states that arises. And that's where kind of, it's just a balance between kind of holding on and letting go. And like I said, you know, there's a lot of holding on to get yourself, a lot of attachment. Get yourself to the sala first. Get yourself to a sitting position. That's where you need to hold on fast. But then once you get to the cushion, get to the sala, it's then time to let go. And to open them, to allow things to be, to look, to study, to learn, instead of kind of having special goals of where you want to be, how deep the meditation should be, what things, what vision you'll be seeing. So, you know, kind of the attitude of mind to set up for the next 3 months is just a sense of gratitude and contentment. Gratitude that you're in a good place with a good community practitioners who are, you know, like-minded, who are pure-minded, good intention, and wanting to practice. Yeah. And we, you know, we have the great support, and our body is good enough. So just, you know, just be happy with that, and then see what arises. We have the great opportunity just, you know, to do a lot of formal meditation. Not too much work project. A lot of chores can be done quietly. So bring a sense of kind of just counting our blessings, what we already have, a sense of joy and happiness just to be here. Yeah. And allow just the beauty of the nature, beautiful yellow wattles we organized specially to bloom this time of year for you guys. Birds are coming. I mean, come on, this is paradise. The only thing that's left. So just feeding on that happiness, feeding on the pure nature of the roundness, allowing that to kind of sink into our mind. And using that just kind of power our meditation. Concentration comes from a happy mind. That's a basic fact. It's physics of the mind, how that works. It doesn't come from willpower. That's why sometimes, you know, in the Ajahn Chah tradition, we don't focus on a technique. And that's where the, you know, it's, it doesn't matter what you focus on, it's how you do it, why you're doing it. You do it from a sense of gratitude, inspiration, sense of contentment, the mind settles. It's not how much you force the mind onto the breath. You can do that for a short while, but long term, it creates tensions, headaches. All sorts of mental issues when you force the mind too much on the breath. You know, you get samadhi headaches. It's the common symptoms you hear from people from time to time. So it's just kind of, and we gratitude is from contentment. You know, happy for the being the support we get, appreciating all the people that come and help feed us, or whatever the cook cooks up in the kitchen. Isn't it? It's beautiful. And knowing that, you know, kind of the mind starts to settle, starts to get bright. You don't have to focus too tough, too hard onto the breath or the body or anything. Those things in mind arises naturally. Happiness on a worldly level starts to deepen and becomes unworldly. The mind becomes bright, energized, and it's still. But its initial stage, it is. We do have to get ourselves to the cushion. We have to do, put in the time of sitting and walking, not distracting ourselves with too many different projects, which I think everybody's pretty good at the moment. No building project, no writing, reading. I'm the only one on the computer, so it's not too bad. Yeah, so now it's just kind of allowing things to settle down. Allowing the past, whatever it is that you were doing before you came here, allowing that to fade away. And now in the future, what is the what project you might be doing? We might go to Thailand after the rains, but we might not. So not to get caught up in those plans happening. And just to really be here, be with the beauty of the forest, looking at the purity, the beauty of the people around us, purity of intention, not perfect. That can be very annoying at times, but that's okay. I know why the Buddha says maybe have about just 3 or 4 disciples at a time. I get it now. Any more than that, can be a bit interesting. But looking at the purity of intention, knowing that yes, no one's perfect, not even myself, you know. After 20 years, I'm still not perfect. But I'm trying, and you are trying, I realize that, I know that. And that's beautiful. People, young people, not so young people, coming to the monastery with the intention to train. And that's something very, very rare in the world. Usually the world goes in the opposite direction. The world moves towards, you know, consumerism, distraction, and confusion, and a sense of selfing. But to move in the opposite direction of looking to train the mind, looking for stillness, looking for clarity, looking something beyond sensuality is something that's very, very rare. And something that is that needs to be encouraged, that needs to be developed. And it takes a long time, moving from a world where, you know, we get what we want in terms of smell, taste, touch, sensuality, relationships. You get that on the internet almost instantly at times. And while it brings a certain sense of gratification, it brings also a certain sense of flaccidity, a weakness of the mind, because we don't have the strength to, when we don't get what we want, we can't not restrain. Restraint doesn't come easy. We get annoyed very quickly when things don't go our way. So there's not that resilience in the mind, mind when we don't get it. So moving, you know, from sensuality to more an atmosphere of restraint takes time. So move from atmosphere where things move a lot and trying to move towards stillness takes time. So that's why the first few weeks, you know, allow the months even, just allow the mind just to gently settle down. And one of the ways to do that is just bring up different sense of happiness. The happiness of just walking in the forest. The happiness of being in a quiet place. Happiness of just sitting in the sala, you know, with a good enough body. Sitting in the sala, enjoying, you know, the quiet company of others. Or not so quiet company when they're coughing, but that's okay. But just enjoying the company of others, doing the right things. So with this simple kind of happiness of the world, it starts to bring the mind a sense of well-being, a sense of connection. That yes, we're all walking our own path, but we're also helping each other, supporting each in our own different ways. And yeah, like I said, every rains is different. I think we almost, for some reason, last few years, 100% turnover, other than myself. Oh, Kelly's here. Kelly wasn't here the whole time. Everybody is new. And every range is always different personality, different kind of dynamics. But it's always, I find a amazingly beautiful experience, just sitting quietly with each other, sharing the quiet space. Not talking too much. But it's something much deeper than all the talking that we might be doing outside the rains. So I think kind of the themes I was thinking of bringing up is, yeah. One is the theme of the body. It's a great reminder. Yeah, we have a range with you from 20 to 62. Even more? How old are you, David? 67. 67? From 20 to 67? It's a long, kind of a range of bodies to work with. But it's in terms of the mind, is something that's ageless and something that's worth developing. Because even though when you are 20, you're 20 in very good health, you can look around you. The only one way the body goes. But the mind is something that doesn't age, something that if you train it properly, bring a lot sense of happiness, sense of well-being, bring a lot more blessing than anything you can imagine the world can offer, certainly the body can offer. But otherwise, yeah, it brings up the sense of, you know, what are we here for? And yes, it is just, you know, find out what is the meaning of happiness? What is the meaning of life? What is true happiness? And as the mind becomes more clear, you can get a feel for that, where that happiness lies. It doesn't lie in the five sense world of tasting, touching, smelling, thinking. It lies in the world of mind. Mind that is still, bright. Mind is energized. That sees clearly. You feel that, you know, peace and stillness is what it's about. Moving towards simplicity, towards emptiness. That's complication. But it's something that each and every one of us have to do for ourselves. We read the books, what Buddhism is. Now this rains retreat, that's where the practice comes in. Each and every one of us has to find ways to inspire ourselves, find ways to energize ourselves, find ways just to initiate energy, persistence, to give it day in and day out. Just keep walking, moving, regardless of moods of likes and dislikes, the moods of ups and downs that we go through from time to time. Find ways to encourage ourselves. Find the steadiness in practice. Because it's easy to do it for 10 days, 2 weeks, 1 day, even. But can we do it consistently throughout the whole rains? Can we do consistency? And that's what, you know, kind of the being in the monastery is about. It's kind of day in and day out. Some people say the monotony of the schedule. But no, it's the steadiness, the regularity. It's only through kind of a fixed background that you can see the changingness of the mind. That everybody here is pretty much the same. But someday, really like the person she left. Other days, you can't stand them. Why is that? The person is the same person. You must have something he did or she did or done, but not really. It's just the mind that's changing. And you're seeing of those moves changing, move, you realize you don't buy into it. You know that all that is the trick of the mind. Whatever it says, it's a liar. Your mind is a great liar until you become enlightened. It tells you to like this, not like that. And 2 months later, it flips around, tells you like something else. It's like, what's going on? Yeah, after a while you see, okay, that's interesting. And you see, yeah, just liking and disliking. Some day you love this monastery. You're in a good mood, everything's great. And then something happens, you get sick, and then everything's terrible. And you can't get out fast enough. Why is that? But that's kind of the beauty of the steadiness of the schedule. The steadiness of the environment. It allows us to see that, to see the mind, to work with our moods and emotions that comes up. And yes, I've been a monk for 18, 19 years. 10 years here at Bodhidharma. Went by pretty quick, actually. I remember my first rains retreat. Went to Bodhicitta. It's in the sala. Freezing back then, so. And who knows, maybe 10 years later here. And it's, every, like I said, every rains is different, but also, every rains is like, it seems like it's an amazing experience. To be able to drop everything, or most things, and just to sit and walk for 3 months. Ability just to be with, you know, the mind and the body. It's something rare and something precious. That this may be your first rains, for many, many rains to go, or it could be your only rains. So make the best of it. You don't know how long you'll be. Only how many rains that's left. I don't know how many more rains I have left. So it's always bring up, you know, arousing the sense of energy, not from guilt or remorse, but a sense of, you know, there's, you know, a great opportunity, a great chance that we have here to really get to know this body and mind that we have. We know what life is about. And it's a great koan that you can ask yourself. Why am I here? What is life about? You can do that. It's a koan. It's a mantra for the rains. See what comes up. It's not a study to find an answer, but to see. Just more of a journey and asking the questions. See what comes up. First week of the rains is a great adventure. First of 12 weeks. As long as we approach it with a sense of gratitude, appreciation of the things that we have, of the things that we've been given, of the blessings that we have, approaching the rains with a spirit of kind of openness. And also with a spirit of playfulness. Don't be afraid to change things, to experiment. Try a different way to watch your breath. Try a different way to practice. Different way to counter your desires, your lust, or your irritations, or ill will that comes up. Different ways to contemplate the body. Yeah, the texts have certain ways to approach, but you know, when the desires, when the defilement shows up in mind, it's very individual, very personal. So find different ways to, you know, to work with that. But most of all, it's just the steadiness, the persistence. Whatever it is that you're doing, just, you know, apply that day in and day out. Like Ajahn Chah said, yeah. Don't just meditate when you're in a good mood and you're happy. Meditate whether you're happy, miserable, sick, annoyed, depressed. Keep on meditating. And then you'll see. That's just the mind doing this thing, the body doing these things. But there's something beyond that. There's the watcher, there's a witness, person who just sees things. To become stronger, become more equanimous. So on this, the first week of a 12-week course, the Rains Retreat, I just want to offer words of encouragement, stability, but also kind of a set of, an attitude, a way, a perspective to look at the rains, the lens of gratitude, the lens of counting the blessings. When we're doing anything, just doing out of inspiration, love for the Buddha, your teachers, your loved ones, dedicate the goodness your family, dedicate the goodness to the people that come and offer dana to a support to the monasteries. And then that way, whatever it is that we do, and we just don't do for ourselves, we do for the whole world. It's like that chant that we do, you know, thinking how much suffering is to have a confused, a clear mind. It's enough to us, it's enough, you know, kind of to spur us to train the mind. The person who dwells with defilements dwells in suffering. The person who dwells free from defilements dwells happily. It reminds me of the story I was going to read the next couple of days. It's about a good sleep. Good sleep goes with the king sees the Buddha in the forest. It happens to be winter. And he asks the Buddha, "Buddha, the Tathagata, did you have a good sleep last night?" And the Buddha says, "Yes, I had a good sleep." It's like, how can you have a good sleep? It's winter. It's very cold. You're sleeping under a tree. The leaves, they're not very many leaves. And the ground is cold. So how can you have a good sleep? And the Buddha's like, it is winter, and there's not that many leaves on the ground, but I still had a good sleep. So what do you think, King? Do you have a good sleep? And so I said, yeah. He didn't ask the king. He said, well, this is how it works. Imagine a prince, right? Sleeps in the royal palace. He gets a nice antelope skin to sleep on. Each corner of the room is lit with four lamps. Fires are roaring. There's his four wives sitting in each corner of the bed to fan him, to massage him as he sleeps. And the temperature is just right. So the Buddha says, so who sleeps better? Him or me or the prince? He says, of course the prince sleeps better. He sleeps in his nice warm room. He's got four wives looking after him. Nice warm fire. Why wouldn't he sleep? But the Buddha says, well, wouldn't that prince, even though he had all this material comfort, wouldn't that prince still be troubled by greed, by lust, by anger, by dreams that invade him from time to time that disturb his sleep because of all these mental defilements that come from time to time? Yes, of course he would, because he's not enlightened. Right? So even all the comfort, you can see that even people, wealthy people, lots of them have problems sleeping, because obviously there are defilements, there's problems in the mind. That's more of the issue. It's not the physical body. But the Buddha says, I am free from those defilements. I'm free from lust, anger, and delusion. So did I who sleeps well. Yeah, so it's interesting. So it's a lot of times it's about the training of the mind. It's not so much with the body, the external stuff. So why did I tell that story? It's only about good sleep. So you want a good sleep? You want a good night's sleep? Instead of drinking your sleeping pills, or exercising, or complaining that the body's not well, train the mind to be happy, to be content. So, at least a good clear mind when you come enlightened, you can have a really, really good sleep. At least that's the benefit it can bring you. On top of everything else. So after that, your reflection tonight, may at the end of the rains, we all have a very, very good sleep.
Annamayam dhammakatha sadhu karam karoma se sadhu, 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 anumodam.
Okay.
Samma sambuddho bhagava buddham bhagavantam abhivadane. Vakata bhagavata dhammo dhammam namassana. Sopatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sangham namassana.